What do you mean it's June? Hi, I'm Richard Dugan. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story in June of 2012. As far as 2012 goes, we're just about halfway home, fortunately. And then we continue on into 2013. Program comes your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. Tell Me Your Story streams live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we are also rebroadcast on Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time at a2zen.fm. And we're also archiving the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. And we look forward to having you as a part of our program every week to gather information, to see what's happening in the world, and to maybe even consider some new possibilities. So that's why we're here, and we're hoping that you will join us every week. And check out the archives page. We've got, I'm not even going to try to do the math, but we'll be ending our fifth year of a broadcast of this program coming up in September. I say we're ending the fifth year. That doesn't mean we're ending the program. It just, we've done almost 5 years worth of programs. So you do the math, 52 programs a year. And it's been great fun. I have met some extraordinary people, not only over the phone, but I've had the privilege of meeting some of these folks in person, even if it's been fleeting. And the energy level is just extraordinary. So I'm hoping to continue to do this for decades to come. Well, this is a beautiful June day, and here we are heading towards summer and the summer solstice and all that that encompasses as we, I don't know if it's that we get closer to the sun per se, or if it's just the tilt of the earth and all of the heat that comes along with it. But nonetheless, it is that transition point, just as December 21st or the winter solstice is that, again, that transition point towards spring. We're heading back towards fall and winter, my favorite seasons of the year. We're going to talk today with a returning guest. I really enjoy having folks come back to the program to share with us where they are today and what kind of changes to the work that they are doing have transpired, what they see happening today as opposed to when we talked to them last. It's been a little over a year since we've had Howard Martin, Vice President of HeartMath.org, HeartMath, in the Institute of HeartMath. And Howard, welcome back to our program.
Hey, Richard, thank you very much. It was a pleasure last time, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you again. And I want to say hello, of course, to everyone who's listening today.
Well, I also had the privilege of meeting you in person there at the Conscious Life Expo down in Los Angeles back in, what was it, March, April?
I think it was February.
Yeah.
Time on the speaking calendar. There's been a lot of speaking events for me this year. That was one of them. I think it was February, the early part of the year. Yeah,
that was great fun. I even had the chance to shake hands with you and with Greg Braden, who will be on the program at the end of this month. Actually, he'll be on the 1st of July. So you guys work together. Your work is cohesive. It's coherent. It meshes together. Everything that you two are working on is quite extraordinary. And, of course, today we're here to talk about the Institute of HeartMath. And one of the things you mentioned to us the last time you were on the program, but I'd like to start with, you have, and tell me the name of these devices that you have scattered around the globe that are measuring specifically what?
Well, the Global Coherence Monitoring Sites is what they are. It's part of the Global Coherence Initiative, which I know we'll talk about a little bit more in our show today, but what these are sensing devices that are very advanced technology that measures changes and fluctuations in the Earth's energetic fields, in particular the geomagnetic field and the ionosphere. These are part of the Earth as a living system. They are protective layers around our planet that protect us from incoming solar radiation, solar flares, cosmic rays, all those kind of things. And without them, we die. And those fields have an impact upon us and a relationship to us, and we're studying that relationship with the Global Coherence Monitoring Sites, which we have some around the world now and more coming.
Now, do you know about how many you have around the globe at this time?
Yeah, sure. I know exactly how many we have.
Keeping track.
Let's a couple have gotten away from me here. We have three working right now. We eventually want 12. The three we have that are in operation now are in Northern California, in England, and in Saudi Arabia. And then very soon we'll have one in New Zealand, another in Northern Canada, and a sixth site will be placed in South Africa before too long.
Okay.
And these sites are being placed in general locations that, once we have the 12, will give us a complete picture of the Earth's energetic fields from a ground-based system, which, Richard, is something that's never been done before. This is something that I would suspect maybe a government or a university would do, but something that HeartMath is doing. So this ground-based system of advanced technology to study the relationship between the Earth's energetic fields and the human race.
Well, now, you have three now. How were the locations selected, and how important is the placement of these devices?
Well, the locations are mapped out by the researchers and scientists that, you know, that understand these fields. And what they're trying to do is each site would like be picking up a sort of a very wide range, actually, like sort of, if you could see it, like a curvature of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know placing these in strategic locations, if they link those together, then they link those curvatures together and they get all of the curvatures. They get the entire picture of the field as it surrounds the Earth. So the locations don't have to be like the exact location, like right on the money of one spot,
mm-hmm.
but in a general region, like for instance, they want one in New Zealand, right? They want one in Northern Canada. The one we have here in Northern California is perfect, and then right across, if you were to draw a line through the Earth, you'd be very close on the other side to where the sensor site is in Saudi Arabia.
So now these are, pardon me, these are sensors, so they're not putting out anything, and it, like a microwave has to be line of sight. FM frequency has to be line of sight. But these aren't transmitting anything per se. They are like satellite dishes listening, if you will, or monitoring.
That's right. They're monitoring and detecting. The only output they have is the data that goes back out to our research labs in Northern California. So there's a data link out of what they are observing.
Now, I don't want to get into a lot of specifics as far as the technical aspects of these monitoring devices per se, but who or had the great foresight to even create something like this? How did this come about?
Well, it's an interesting story. I mean, our researchers were interested in things like this for a long time, and then a woman came to us, a woman we didn't know. She was a NASA scientist and physicist named Dr. Elizabeth Roscher. And along the way, she and her husband had developed sensing technology to look at these energetic fields. The reason they did it is because they believed that there were changes in the ionosphere, for example, that preceded seismic activity, mm-hmm. volcanoes and earthquakes. And they had a rudimentary version of this technology they were using, and they placed it in various locations where there could be an earthquake, for example. And 80% of the time, when they had a sensor in an area within 100 miles of where a quake occurred, they detected it before the quake actually occurred. In some cases, 2 weeks prior to the time the actual earthquake occurred, they were seeing changes in the ionosphere. So she wanted to know if our researchers wanted to use it for anything, if we had any use for it. She'd been talking to other researchers. She hadn't found people that she felt comfortable with, you know, giving the technology to. So our researchers asked her a question. They said, well, we could use it for your original purposes, but we've always had a belief that mass human emotion, consciousness itself, has an interface and interplay with the Earth's energetic fields. Do you believe that's possible? She went on to say that she'd always believed it, even since she was a young girl, and that if we wanted to use it for consciousness research, that would be fine with her. So she gave the technology to our researchers. They took it and expanded upon it and developed it further, brought in other scientists to refine it, and then eventually began to deploy these sensor sites.
And these have been out for around 20 years, the three?
No. They've been out. The sensor sites we've had now have been up for about two and a half years.
Oh, only 2.5. Okay.
Yeah. Not 20. HeartMath has been around for over 20 years,
okay.
But this is a relatively new project for us.
So what was out in the field at the turn of the century that was measuring human activity, if you will, especially around 2001, September 11th?
What that was government satellites. And the government has National Oceanographic and Aeronautic Administration,
mm-hmm.
has a couple of satellites. They call them generically space weather satellites, and they're in geosynchronous orbits above both coasts of the United States. And they're looking back at the Earth's fields, for one thing, but they're also looking at things like solar wind and solar radiation, things like that. Again, generically, it's called space weather.
Mm-hmm.
So they were looking back at just the power in the Earth's geomagnetic fields. So it's from outer space that they're looking back at the fields, not a land-based system, but a system based with satellites.
What's the advantage of a ground-based system versus a satellite-based system? I mean, obviously, expense is one, but...
I think you're getting a different picture, a different view that way. From outer space, you're looking back at a very, very long distance. When you have a ground-based system, you're looking at it right where the fields are.
Okay.
The geomagnetic field, for example, is created by the spinning of the iron core at the center of the Earth. It's the field that a magnet that we measure with a magnet or that kind of thing. It's what the geomagnetic field is. A compass measures the geomagnetic field. So we're looking at it closer, and we're looking at it from a different window of view, a different angle. And I think there's tremendous advantage in that because, you know, these space weather satellites are just looking at power spectrums within the field. We're able to look at lots of other data that these fields produce.
Now, you're one of the founders of HeartMath. How and why did you found this extraordinary endeavor?
Well, HeartMath was started a long time ago, almost 40 years ago now. Doc Childry is the man who's the founder of HeartMath. He's been my friend for over 40 years. And we didn't have ambition. We weren't trying to start anything. We were trying to explore our own consciousness and trying to be better people and trying to learn the mechanics of how we could, you know, live lives that were meaningful and fulfilling on purpose and, you know, work through some of our own issues and our own emotional things and all that. So we were doing work on ourselves. We did it in obscurity without writing anything down, calling it anything, or ever having any ambition to be an organization for a very long time, 10 or 15 years. Eventually, you know, just from doing that inner work, it creates a draw, so to speak, a magnetic draw, and people, you know, found us.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, we made friends with folks that we felt comfortable with. They lived in Northern California, where we are now. They had some pre-existing businesses. They were authors, wrote books, things like that. And basically, after a period of relationship with them, and they wanted to know if would we be willing to let them help us take what Doc had created and what we'd learned ourselves along the way, and let's put it into some sort of an organization and a structure. So we started with no real resources to speak of, no big investment money or anything, no real clear-cut plan of what we were going to do. We were really following our hearts, but we basically just began to take what we'd learned and to write it down and to put it into a system. That's become what's called the HeartMath system, which is now a huge body of work. It's tools, methods, techniques, technology, all underpinned with published scientific research, expanded all around the globe with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who in some way or another have been touched by HeartMath ongoing, if not millions of people, really. And it was just Doc's desire, if you go back to your original seed question. Doc was a man who could see the changes coming, and he was a very caring man, and he wanted to do what he could to develop a simple system that all people could use, regardless of where they were in the world, what their educational backgrounds were, any of that, that people could use to empower themselves through these changing times. Mm-hmm. That it was going to be, he could see way a long time ago that this was an important time period we were moving into, and that it was going to be an opportunity for humanity to make some big shifts. But in the context of that opportunity, it could also be challenging. So it was his desire and his care to put together something that we could share that could make things easier for other people.
The thing that comes to mind is like what you folks have created is sort of a global biofeedback device, if you will, or monitoring system for the Earth and its people.
Well, that part of it, yeah. And one of the things that it's kind of like doing is it's kind of like measuring the heart rhythms and brain waves of the planet for the first time.
Hmm. And I want to get into a discussion more of what you folks have found over the last couple of years, especially in terms of monitoring the heart rate, if you will, and brain waves of the Earth and its people. There's a word, though, that I have been hearing cropping up in conversation. I haven't really used it that much. I have a feeling it's going to be the next big buzzword. And it ties into a question that came to me a couple of years ago during one of our programs having to do with, you know, what are we here for? And it's not it wasn't so much that deep philosophical question, why am I here, as much as what is humanity here to achieve or accomplish, in terms of what endeavors are we supposed to be about? But the word Thrive has been used on several occasions to describe what we as human beings ought to be doing. Not surviving, but thriving. And the majority of the population isn't. It's barely surviving in many countries around the world, and so forth, in various stages of survival mode. What's your take on that?
On what we're here for and on the thrive concept, is that the question?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, yeah, it's a big question, and I don't know that we all, any of us really have an exact answer for that. But, you know, we are here to create, to love, to cooperate, to create something beautiful and synergistic. I think that's the purpose of it all, is really to manifest love in many different ways, in many different forms. And I think that's the purpose of not only life here on this planet, but, you know, but life within the universe itself. It's all a big, giant system of love and creation. Now, I know it sounds very philosophical and very wide, and in fact it is, but it was a wide question. I do think that, you know, we are not thriving, as you said. I think there are many millions of people that are. We see people all the time that are just doing amazing things, that are amazing human beings, that are manifesting some qualities that you just have to step back and admire. At the same time, you've got billions of people that are just trying to get by. They're trying to survive. They're just, you know, hoping that they can make it through it. And I think that's part of the shift that we're in right now, is that we can't look at life all the time as something we're just trying to get through.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at it as something we enjoy, something that's an amazing adventure that has its ups and downs and all arounds and its challenges. But at the end of the day, it's a great opportunity and a gift to be alive, mm-hmm. a tremendous gift that we have to have a chance to be here and to do the amazing things that we do and to experience this world we live in, which is a pretty cool place if you step back and view it. It's just amazing that we have an opportunity to be alive, and especially at this time. So I try to stay optimistic about that. I certainly have challenges like anyone else would today. I have compassion for what's going on and for people and the challenges they face. And at the same time, I want to stay enthusiastic and inspired and appreciative of a chance to grow and to change and to hopefully make a contribution to the world that will last, that will help other people long after I'm gone.
Yeah, that ties into another area called the legacy. That's a legacy end of that, and we'll talk more about that when we come back. I'm talking with the Vice President of HeartMath, the Institute of HeartMath, and that is the website. The website is actually heartmath.org, where you can not only sign up for a newsletter, you can also, I like this, Howard, you can take a stress and wellness, well-being survey. That might be a good thing for me to deal with. I have issues with high blood pressure. It fluctuates all over the place. I went to the doctor the other day. The gal took my reading, and it was like, I don't know, 134 over 90 or something. Not terrible, not compared to what I'd had. And 20 minutes later, after just chatting with the doc, he took it. And he said it was 120 over 76. I mean, literally, in less than 20 minutes, it dropped down to what is considered to be a very normal, relaxed, calm state of mind and body. Wow. And it's like, okay, because they can't find any other problems that would be exacerbating this issue. So I'm saying, it's in my head. I know, it's in my it's in my head. So I'm thinking this stress and well-being survey might be a good thing for me to take.
Well, it's a great survey. It's not trivial. It's a very... it's a scientifically vetted research survey that you can take on the Institute of HeartMath website for free.
Okay.
And it can show you where you've got areas you may want to improve on. It is a stress and well-being survey. It's a psychometric survey.
Hmm.
You know, and it's a very sophisticated one at that, and can be used for a lot of things. But it's fun to take just to see where we might be and where we compare to others and that sort of thing.
Well, we're going to come back and talk more about HeartMath. I want to talk more about the Global Coherence Initiative as well. We've talked a little bit about the equipment, but also we'll talk more in depth about it as well. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're going to come back in just a moment with Beth McDonald, and she's going to share with us what's going on in the sun, the moon, and the stars as far as the zodiac is concerned. This is Tell Me Your Story. Professional glassblower and craftsman Saul Alcaraz of Santa Barbara Art Glass can design and create a custom piece for you, your home, or your business. And here's all you need to do.
All I need to know is the colors of your house. I'll take it from there. I can make your salad bowl, your plates, your drinking glasses, your wine glasses, your pitcher, cups, and a chandelier to finish it up. And they will look really beautiful on your table. And obviously, we gotta have the right sizes. Send me the metalwork, the hardware, where it's gonna sit. I mean, I have dedicated thousands and thousands of hours. I've been playing with the glass for 21 years. I specialize in antiques. That's my forte.
Can people come by the shop unexpected?
I like it when they come in unexpected, and they'll probably bring some good energy in. Our studio, it's at 706 East Mason Street, two blocks from Miltas in Santa Barbara.
How do people get a hold of you?
Check out my website, sbrglass.com, or call us at 805-965-1541.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
Till I got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close. Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're going to talk with our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald. We're into, I'm remembering correctly, Gemini. And we just had an eclipse, one type of eclipse. We have another one coming up, and those are rather significant.
Yes, they're significant, and they're not, you know, in a way. We forget how often they happen. We always have two sets of two per year. Sometimes we have a little more than that, but because we can't always see them, we kind of forget how normal they are.
And they play what role as far as we're concerned in terms of Gemini and so forth?
Well, this is significant because the two weeks ago, on May 20th, we had a solar eclipse where the sun and moon were conjunct in the sign of Gemini. And now Monday, on May 4th, June 4th, we have a lunar eclipse where the sun and moon are basically opposing each other in the sky. The sun is still in Gemini. The moon is in Sagittarius, and the sun's in the middle.
Okay.
Or the Earth is in the middle.
Okay. Now, I've had the opportunity to see a lunar eclipse, and they are quite spectacular if you're able to get a telescope and watch something like that. Now, this one is going to be happening very early in the morning, local time.
Right. Right. It's around 4 a.m. Pacific time. Now, keep in mind, you know, I have two different things. I have one that says 4:04. I have one that says 4:12, both a.m. Pacific. But the thing that was really reiterated to me with the most recent solar eclipse was, you know, these things go on for quite some time. Sometimes, you know, the solar eclipse evolved over, you know, we were tracking it for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, from start to finish. The actual ring that was around the sun was not so long at all, but the progression was fascinating to watch, and you can spend some serious time on that if you like.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Now, what are some of the things that we should look for as far as, I'll use influences as the more neutral
word.
As a key word.
Yes. One of the things I love about the eclipses is it is a time when more is revealed. where things that had kind of been hidden from us or inaccessible, mm-hmm. things that had been kind of hiding in the shadows, suddenly become more known mm-hmm. to us. It's a time when we get more information.
Sort of like the veil, once again, is lifted
yes.
somewhat. Yes.
And so, you know, sometimes, you know, we can get a little frustrated by this because not knowing is ignorance is bliss sometimes, you know, but it's definitely not a sustainable position. Yeah. And so a lot of times people, what I see in my practice is people show up about the time of the eclipses and they're often overwhelmed by some late breaking news or some new developments or something that had actually been going on for quite some time that they finally became aware of.
Yeah. I have to say that from the 14th of May to the 27th of May, of course, I was going through my own personal health issues. As a matter of fact, I ended up having to take 3 days off from work just because I just didn't have the energy.
Right.
And that was...
You got that bug, virus.
Whatever it was, and I worked my way through it, and I'm on the other side and feeling great, 100% again. But I'm wondering, in terms of those kinds of influences on our lives, what can we look for, let's say, through the month of June as we're going to transition from Gemini, we'll be transitioning into Cancer in late June?
Yes. You know, because these eclipses are so heavily embedded in the sign of Gemini, a lot of what is revealed is going to be on a very personal level. Gemini rules how you think and how you speak, and so it's a lot about how you assess and process people and situations and information. Gemini also rules your siblings. It rules your cousins. It rules your in-laws. It rules your neighbors, you know, people who are, you know, different aspects of your community. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes there's... That becomes available.
And that information can be vital to the extent that we choose to take it in, process it, and evaluate it in such a way that we can actually use it to help ourselves to avoid other negative
trials and tribulations.
Trials and tribulations.
Self-inflicted damage.
There you go.
Yeah,
there
it's very much about, it's always empowering information mm-hmm. that comes through. Sometimes you really have to work to reframe it as such.
Yeah.
But information is our friend.
And we're going to get more information from Beth McDonald by going to BethMcDonaldConsulting.com and calling 963-0842. And we're also going to get more information when we come back from our break from our guest. We're going to be talking and continuing our interview with Howard Martin from HeartMath. And Beth, thank you so much. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Awesome. Thank you, Richard.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Tell Me Your Story in just a moment.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Rupa Chari bring you this health tip.
Here's today's Chari Center of Health quick tip for weight loss. Make a commitment today to make good health and body fitness a priority in your life. Health is a priceless gift and is wealth. We are committed to enhancing your health. Start the day right and eat breakfast. Your mom was right. A good healthy breakfast gets your metabolism kicked off for the day. Eating breakfast is good for weight loss. In fact, people who eat breakfast are more likely to maintain a healthy weight. People falsely believe that skipping breakfast is a strategy for losing weight, but that's not true. The body needs to be refueled a few times each day, starting with breakfast. When you skip breakfast, you are more likely to become tired because your brain and body run low on fuel. Studies have shown that children who eat breakfast actually do better in school. Of course, the same logic applies to adults, since you both feel better and perform better at work.
Making a healthy breakfast, what should you eat? Ideally, a healthy breakfast should contain both protein and fiber. Protein can come from eggs or beans. Fiber can be found in whole grains, vegetables, and fruits. A good example of a healthy breakfast might be something simple, like a hard-boiled egg, an apple, and a bowl of oatmeal with a little cinnamon or a whole grain cereal made with water. Avoid sugary cereals, syrups, pastries, and white breads because they are digested quickly, raise your blood sugar, cause weight gain, and will leave you feeling hungry and tired in a couple of hours, whereas protein and fiber satisfy your hunger and will keep you feeling full until lunchtime. Be good to yourself and know that eating a healthy breakfast is the best way to start off your day.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Howard Martin, who is the Executive Vice President of Institute of Heart Math, and heartmath.org is the website. We were talking before the break about this, a lot of different things on your website, the Stress and Well-Being Survey, which I think I'm going to take. But you have a couple of other things that I wanted to touch upon. And before we do that, I'm going to mention them anyway. And they are the GPS for the Soul. And then you have a special project and DVD for those returning military personnel to help them out. But I wanted to talk just a little bit more about the Global Coherence Initiative, if I have that correct.
Okay, sure.
pardon me, I caught in the throat there. When did this initiative start? And I guess the best question is, and how's it been going? I mean, what have you found out through this initiative?
Well, first of all, it's a membership organization where you can join for free. It's you go to glcoherence.org. That's the website. And there are members from over 87 countries around the world. It's about 45,000 members now. Members get inside the site where you can get a hold of free webinars and teleseminars by myself, Greg Braden, and others. You get access to the Global Care Room, which is an amazing place you can go where you can see where people around the world are located that are sending their heart focus, care, and intention into helping planetary needs. A lot of other things that you get as a member. You can see some of the research information, see what the sensor sites are producing each day, things like that. But more importantly, it's bringing people together from all around the world to really use our hearts to influence the energetic field environment that we all draw from, that, you know, creates our reality and shapes psychology, systems, everything else that we are involved in life. So what the project's goal really is twofold. One is to help ease things a bit as we go through these transitional times, to make it easier for people to find their own hearts and to find their own sense of self-security as we go through this acceleration and change. The other part, of course, we talked about a little earlier in your show, Richard, which is to look at the interactions taking place between humans and the Earth's energetic fields and to draw some correlation between that of how these fields affect us, but also how we can impact the fields in a way that creates positive benefit on society. So that's why we created it. It's just one part of HeartMath, which is, there's a lot of things that happen here at HeartMath, but that's one part of it. People that want to join can just go to glcoherence.org, and membership is free. You just put in your email address and create a password and you're a member. I'm going to go there now just to look. This Care Focus room is really cool because it's just a part of the site, but when you go there, there's a globe on the site, and it's a beautiful picture of our Earth, for starters. And when you log in, it marks your internet provider address, and that means not your house, but where your internet provider is, which is close to your house. And right now, for example, I just went in there, and there are 119 people there right now who are there for a reason. They're putting their heart out into the world. They're making a difference in the energetic field environment of the Earth. They're loving things. They're trying to ease things. And I'm seeing people around the world. They're all over Europe. I'm looking at that. I've got people in Australia. I've got people in China. I've got people in Africa, South America, a whole bunch of people in South America right now that have logged in at this particular time, and, of course, United States and Canada. So that's one of the things you can do when you become a member of Global Coherence Initiative. The other thing is there's a counter right on the front of the site. It tells me how many members we have. So if anybody wants to go there now while they're listening and can, then that number would increase. We could actually see it increase during the show. But right now there's almost 44,000 members of Global Coherence Initiative.
Hmm. Well, I'm actually at that website now, and your number may go up here in just a moment by at least one, because I'm going to be a part
That's
of
right.
this initiative. That seems to be, and you used interesting term early on in the program, especially when it deals with magnetism, and that when we start going down a particular path, and doing our thing, whatever it is, whether it is our purpose or not our purpose, just whatever it is we're doing, we tend to draw experiences and people to us that tend to support that path. Whether it's for our good or not, we tend to draw those things to us. And it's kind of like the old analogy of putting a VHS tape movie into the machine to watch this movie, hoping to expect a different result. We keep watching the same movie over and over again, getting the same result. And until we change the tape, it won't change. So it sounds to me like when somebody would sign up for at the website, again, that's glcoherence.org, and begin that process of becoming a part of this growing group, that how would I phrase this? That their magnetic charge, if you will, starts to change? Something like that?
Yeah, in a sense, we all live in a field of consciousness that's reflecting back to us, not just what we think in our minds, but especially what we feel in our hearts. And this is sort of how reality begins to work. Now, that field of consciousness is interactive with us. It changes and goes and flows. We input into it, it feeds back to us. There's a collective consciousness, so to speak, you know, that we can have an influence on. We put more love and care into it. It makes it, you know, easier for other people anywhere they are in their lives or in the world to feel something similar to that. So we're all interfacing at this energetic or electromagnetic and consciousness level. And so everything we do, all of our thoughts, all of our feelings, all our actions, all our interactions, all that stuff counts. And a question that I ask myself all the time is, what am I feeding the field?
Mm.
What's in my consciousness right now? What am I contributing to that field? And is it something that I want to reflect back to me? And is it something that I want others to experience or not? And you know, a simple question like that can wake me up to that I need to make a change in attitude or adjust something, you know, in the moment right then.
It is interesting. People do find it because I'm seeing more and more programs and little videos online having to do with change and humanity, and that mm-hmm. that's the one element that we just have the most trouble with is change. And yet that is truly the only way that we are going to evolve, that we are going to rise above the more primitive and base nature that we've been exhibiting for several thousand years.
Well, here's the thing, Richard. Individually and collectively, change is going to happen whether we like it or not, especially now. This is a very important and dynamic era that we live in. This is one of the biggest shifts in consciousness ever experienced in the history of our world. And so it just becomes a matter of how much we go with the flow on that, how much we find our fulfillment in it, or how much we continue to resist it. And again, that's individually and collectively. So, you know, as we begin to want the change and we're not afraid of it, then we have the ability to embrace it more. And as we do, then we find there's great fulfillment in it all. That's where, you know, the core work of heart math comes in. This is about heart and about the intelligence of the heart, meaning that source of wisdom, intuition, self-security that we all have inside us. Bringing that to the forefront in our daily lives is what heart math is really doing. We do it through all these different methods, everything from working with the military to doing Global Coherence Initiative, and everything in between. So there's a lot of ways we try to facilitate that, but our fundamental mission is to create a more heart-based world and to bring people closer to this magnificent intelligence that they already have. And in doing so, then this change becomes something that's not daunting. It becomes something that we become excited about. It's an adventure. But you're right, change is something most people, including me, a lot of times don't really want. So we have to find that place inside ourselves where we have the self-security to embrace change, because it's going to happen whether we like it or not.
There is something new that you folks have come out with, and it's, I mentioned it earlier, the GPS for the soul. Tell us about that.
Well, it's not out yet. It'll be out in, I think, the second week of July. It's a project we're involved in. It's not ours. We are in a joint venture or a project venture with Huffington Post and AOL Time Warner. Arianna Huffington, the creator of Huffington Post, has a very spiritual side to her, and she has been wanting to do this for a very long time. And what she's doing is creating a web app that will have a variety of things in it where people can use it and go and find things about their, you know, how to improve their relationships, how to improve their health, you know, guided meditations, things like that that are built into the app. Heart math's in it because we have what's called coherence building technology. It's technology that measures the quality of interactions between our heart and our brain and our body. And our coherence building technology is being built into the GPS for the soul. In other words, people can use that to get in sync and to synchronize themselves better and align themselves mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and then do other things within the application that are being provided by other people. So it's a project we're involved in and in consort with. It's going to be really, really big because AOL Time Warner is huge. They have 146 million unique visitors a month. And that plus AOL, which is the parent company, and the reach that they have to expose things and market things, this is going to be a very big app. So we're excited here at HeartMath of being a part of it and having a central role in it. So it's something that will be out in July. I'm surprised you heard about it. There's been some press releases. Arianna Huffington herself has been talking about it from the stage at the places she's speaking. But word's getting out already, so it's a lot of buzz being built around it. I think you're the third interviewer in the last month that's asked me about it. So somebody knows about it, but yet it's not been released yet, which is pretty cool.
Absolutely. Well, what I can tell you, my friend, is your webmaster has updated the website, and it's on the front page.
Oh, on the HeartMath website.
On the HeartMath website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the HeartMath.com site.
It's. Yeah. I think this is very cool, especially considering that it doesn't, in this day and age, with the technology the way that it is, and I have to tell you that I am not a Facebook or Twitter person. However, I don't have a problem connecting in these fashion in these ways in which you have suggested as far as these two websites are concerned. By the way, it turns out I'm already a member of the GL Coherence website.
You are.
I tried to sign up again and it wouldn't let me do it. But I think that I have to wonder, too, if by virtue of connecting with folks around the world through these various projects, that it changes us in at so many different levels and in so many different ways, to the extent that if we are actually able to literally connect with some of these people in a very real and tangible way, like, you know, you and I down at the Conscious Life Expo back in February. And that gives it some substantiability, if you will, if that's the right pronunciation of that word.
That's pretty good. I like that, substantiability. Yeah. I make up words all the time. I didn't know anybody else did, but I guess they do because that's how we get new words.
Well, this is true. There may be another word that is already in existence, and I just forgot what it was. Needless to say.
I like that one. That's good. It works.
But it allows us to put flesh to flesh, shake hands, see each other eye to eye, and so forth, but even more so, and I suppose even that we can still, if you will, and I use this term loosely, we can still feel each other across the globe when we're connected in this fashion.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing replaces it face-to-face, but we do have the ability to have face-to-face, but also this massive amount of connectivity through the electronic technologies we have today. So I think it's wonderful we have all of it, and I love to do things like your radio show. I love to participate in the many teleseminars and webinars and things that I do, but I really love being on that stage and meeting people and shaking hands and, you know, being able to see someone like you that we've met on the radio, but we never had met in person, so the chance to do that was really fun, and nothing replaces that, but we have a lot of things we can use to connect ourselves today.
Yeah, I've always invited my guests, even if we're on the phone, that, hey, if you're in the Santa Barbara area, let me know, and we'll sit down and we'll do an interview because I find those interviews to be sort of at the top of the list. Phone interviews are wonderful. They're fine. I have no problem with them. But it's so much, the energy in the room is so much different when you're face-to-face in that respect. And so we do have a lot. And I extend that invitation to you. If you're in the Santa Barbara area, please let me know. And
okay.
We'll get together and we'll put together another program as well. It seems to me also, I mean, we constantly are talking about change, that, you know, whether we like it or not, things are changing. I think that one of the interesting things is that I think I heard it put this way, that we would really like things to, like, let the dust settle and just kind of relax in the space that we're in. And be in the now moment. But there was another part of that phrase. This person said, and the moment that you recognize that you are in the now, you've lost it. It's almost like if you're trying to capture that, rather than just living your life, okay, as consciously as you can, but just living your life rather than saying, okay, am I in the now? You've lost it. And I kind of use the analogy. I'm not sure if you've ever watched somebody recording on the computer, and you can see the wave on one side of the screen being created, and the other side it's blank because there's nothing been created there yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see that line in the center of the recorder where the wave is being created. That line is the now moment. But the moment you see the wave created on the left side of that line, it's not now anymore. It's past. So I think that that's one of the things that we struggle that because of the terminology that's being used these days about, you know, don't live your life in the past and worry about the future, live in the now. I think people, they find that difficult to do because, like I said, like I've heard it said, once you have said, oh, I'm living in the now, you've lost it because
yeah.
you've tried to, oh, I'm not going to create another new word here, please. You try to make it tangible. You try to grab onto it with both hands, and the now is not something that you can do that with.
That's true. It's best we can to stay in the moment, though. I mean, so you're not projecting into the past or too far into the future about things. There's something to be said for that. But this absolute thing of being in the now is hard to do. You know, and I think it's more of a concept at this point than anything. So
let me ask you about the future. In regards to not only HeartMath, but in regards to you, Howard Martin, and the work that you are involved in, both with the Global Coherence Initiative and the Institute for HeartMath and any other projects that you're involved with, you did say that you still feel very optimistic about humanity's future. Could I go so far as to say you don't feel or believe that we're going to annihilate ourselves, that we're going to turn the next page in the chapter and continue on and hopefully continue at a higher level of consciousness?
Yeah, I actually think we've already crossed the line. I'm a pragmatist. I understand the problems we have, and I think we've got a lot of hard road to walk to straighten them out. But I do think that we have done enough, that we've gone to another level. There are too many people, millions, hundreds of millions around the world that are operating in a different paradigm now, that we've crossed a certain line there that's going to give us the ability to move into a very, very bright future. It won't be overnight. It's not going to happen on, you know, December 21st, 2012. It's a bigger deal going on than that. But ultimately, we're going to end up in a really good place. So I'm a pragmatist and an optimist at the same time. But I'm beginning to see more and more now of so much positive change that is being made in the midst of all the chaos and all the terrible stuff we see. There's so much good going on. And I think that we are evolving very quickly. And I think that we have to look at what's possible for us now with a new belief system. We can't look at it the same way we looked at it before. The rules are changing. The rules of time and space, everything, are beginning to shift. And we have to look at things through fresh eyes, with fresh perspectives and a new hopeful perspective, because I think what's coming is something we've never seen before. It's not just what we have today with new clothes put on it. It's something different. And because of that, we have to just trust in our own hearts, put out more love and care, and especially compassion for ourselves and for others right now. Let's see what happens. I think it's going to be an exciting unfoldment. It's an interesting time to be alive.
I know there are a lot of people that are invested in the way things are now and the way things have been for the last 40, 50, 60 years. They don't want to let go of the old paradigms, the current institutions, and so forth. Do you think, and have you maybe you've experienced this firsthand with folks, that folks who may be very well invested, and I don't mean monetarily necessarily, but in terms of beliefs and this is the structure in which I want to live, some of these folks are starting to make that shift?
Absolutely. You know, people are beginning to change now and flow. There's a lot of people that are going to hang on to the old, and they will. You know, and there's a lot of institutions, and not only new people, but institutions that are just going to flat out hang on to what's been. And they're not going to want to move. They're not going to want to shift. A lot of things are going to force the hand on that. Not everybody's going to want to do it, and there's going to be a lot of conflict. That's part of the tension you feel today.
Mm.
It's like there's a new world being birthed in the middle of the old one. It's pushing out against the sides of the old world. As it pushes out against that old world, you know, it creates that tension.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see more and more of that stuff happening. It isn't over. But as I said earlier, I'm an optimist. I say we're headed in the right direction, and things are going to work out. It's just going to take a little time. But that we are headed in a good direction.
Barbara Marks Hubbard uses the same analogy as of a birth, and that you have birth pangs. That's the tension.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before we wrap up the program, a couple of other questions for you, and you've touched upon it to some degree throughout the program today. But I'm going to ask the question straight on and ask, who is Howard Martin?
Who am I? I'm just a little man who's done the best he can to grow and change every day and to try to do something of service for others. And that's about it, you know.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve with the work that you're doing?
Well, I think that, Richard, that at the end of the day, I want to have left something behind through HeartMath and through my work with HeartMath that is sort of stepping stones that people can use for many, many years to come to learn how to better regulate their emotions, to bring more spirit into their humanness, and to find a new level of intelligence within themselves that allows them to enjoy life more fully and to experience the wonder and amazement that life offers. And I think that's what we're doing now, and I want to continue that. I want to refine it, and I want to always be working on myself first so that whatever I'm giving is something that I understand, you know, that within myself first, not just words, but something that I've experienced. And if I can do that and keep doing that consistently, then I'll be a happy man. You know, if I feel like I've left behind something that generations long after me will benefit from.
Well, it's, to me, extraordinary work that you and your entire team and people like Greg Braden and Barbara Marks Hubbard and alike are all doing to help us all, to, if nothing more, to help us to stay on track. If our desire is to have a better world, have a world where everybody can, and I'm going to use the word thrive instead of just survive. And I mean everybody. All 7 billion of us should be able to thrive. I don't think that there's I'm the type of optimist who believes that there's more than enough for everybody because we don't all want the same things. We all want
True.
Different things.
Well, a man like you, Richard, does a show like this. I mean, people need to understand this is work. I mean, it's a love for you, but it's a lot, and it goes on into organizing something like this. But you and others that do it give a platform, in a sense, for people like myself, Greg, Barbara, and my other colleagues and friends, a chance to share what we've learned, and hopefully the listeners benefit from that, and it inspires them to be what they can be, because it isn't about us. It's about what everybody has within themselves, and as they bring that forward into their life, they can experience wonderful things, and that's what I want for everybody, really, is to be fulfilled.
Great. Well, the websites that I want to pass out to our listeners before we wrap up here are heartmath.org, and these are both .orgs, and then glcoherence.org, and you can get information about both these programs at those websites. Sign up for free and either get the newsletter and or take the survey. I think I will be going back to that stress and well-being survey just to see where I stack up and what other changes that I can make to, again, get along with the outside world a little bit better. Howard, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure, and we look forward to having you back again. And when you see Greg this month, tell him I'll be talking to him at the end of the month and that we had a great time.
I sure will. I'll talk to him probably on Tuesday, and I'll mention it. And I want you to take care of yourself, and I want everybody listening to know that you have this power within yourself. You have a wonderful heart. Use it and enjoy life.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we are trying to give you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, rebroadcast at atozen.fm, and archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. I hope that you'll join us every Saturday. Check out the archives. And I hope that you also will be well. Until next Saturday, loved.